Who, me? What? Yeah, I'm here, man.
What's going on? Sorry I'm late. Oh, just a little. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I don't know. I guess no guests today. I should have invited more people, but I was reading. I should have been inviting the people I was reading. Well, anyway, that's all right, because I got plenty of bad news for you. Yeah, some funny stories, too. I'll probably start with a couple of funny ones here. Ramsey, man. I should have emailed Ramsey. Let me get one of those going here. Where are you, Ramsey? Oh, crap. All right. Anyway, so maybe Ramsey Baroud. He can never do it on short notice, though, so forget that. I mean, I'll try, but... Anyway. I'm Scott Horton. The thing is, I'm a libertarian, which means I hate the government. Oh, I hate it so much, and I insist that everyone else hate it as much as me. And to that end, I show you the truth about their foreign policies, so that you will... apprehend and comprehend the truth that the U.S. government is the greatest purveyor of violence on the face of the earth, as Saint MLK put it. You can't say nothing because it's an MLK quote. It's as true now as it was then, and there's just not a thing legitimate or defensive about it whatsoever. So. Now, you might say I'm an ideologist. Well, fine, but I wear my agenda on my sleeve. I hate them. I hate them. Liars. Killers. Absolutely hate them. And so, yeah, that's why I'm here. So that to try to get you to hate them, too. It's mostly a substantive thing, though. The hate's in you. I can't do nothing but plant a seed, you know? I'm doing what I can. Sorry for plagiarizing Bill Hicks all the time. It's not really my fault. He's older than me. All right. Well, I was trying to get Trevor Aronson on because I still want to talk with him about this great piece about the guy whose job it used to be to entrap idiots into saying they love Osama so that the FBI can parade him on TV and call him an orange alert for you and all this stuff. But he's now flipped and turned... defense witness instead of state's witness. And now every time the FBI entraps some boob and saying, oh yeah, I want to go fight for ISIS, guys. Then this guy calls up the lawyers and says, hey, trust me. I know how they do this and I can help you get your client off. Ha ha. It's just a matter of time, right? Can only entrap people like that for so long. In a row before one of them gets the idea he could make just as much money being an honest guy telling the truth about the dishonesty. Good times. Trevor's very busy. He's at some conference, so I think, hey, that's great, man. That means that people are probably listening to the things that he says, right? And that's really important that this goes from any sort of fringe media topic to a very mainstream topic. That, hey, you know, the FBI going around and entrapping idiots... all day. One, doesn't make me love them, doesn't make me afraid of the ridiculous idiots that they entrap, but does concern me that these guys have a monopoly on being our national police force here, and they're blowing it. There's a very slim chance you'd have any real ass Al-Qaeda or ISIS types come to the United States to commit some kind of spectacular attack, as they call it, but they could. And just like Boston, just like Fort Hood, just like, you know, you name the few actual legit attempted attacks, the FBI is too busy chasing their tail. Hell, even with the case of the underpants bomber, they were too busy chasing their tail looking for an opportunity to entrap him to realize, yeah, he had a real bomb on him. Well, not a very good one, thank goodness, but anyway. All over America right now, FBI agents concerned with entrapping innocent people into being guilty of something, while possibly actual attacks are being plotted right under their noses. Nobody ever blames them. Nobody ever says, wait a minute, a terrorist bombing happened in Boston? Well, every single FBI agent in the state of Massachusetts ought to be on trial then. What the hell is their excuse for that? How could anybody think for a minute that these guys deserve the benefit of the doubt anymore when it comes to this stuff? It's incredible. By the way, a couple of phone stories here for you. Back from the dead, U.S. officials ask secret court to revive NSA surveillance. That's in The Guardian, but don't worry because, according to Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com, the FBI illegally kept phone surveillance going without the Patriot Act. Don't worry about it, they said. The Freedom Act will pass on Tuesday, whichever it was. Yeah, Wednesday. Was it yesterday? I think. Yeah. Anyway, so don't worry about it. Even if Rand Paul does kill the Patriot Act, we'll just go right along. And he's linking here to a story in the Washington Times. But you know what? He's just talking about the FBI there. I don't know about the NSA. Maybe the NSA did turn their switch off for 2 days or something. But I like stories like this where law enforcement, not just the government, right? Not just, you know, housing and urban development or whatever, but the cops just outright break the law unapologetically. No, our job is enforcing the law. It doesn't tell us what we can or cannot do. Just like the American government on the, you know, global, in the global arena is the world cop and therefore immune from the rules. That's the same thing. Can't have a world state without somebody doing the enforcing. And you can't have somebody doing the enforcing without them having immunity. And yes, there is a world government. It's based in Washington, D.C. It's called the Pentagon. And, they have their adjunct, the CIA out there in Langley. No fear. Don't worry about Brussels, man. Your global state is a little closer to home. And then check this out, man. I just love this for the camp of it. At Salon.com. What if Rand Paul were Muslim? The white privileged assumptions behind his Patriot Act, quote, principles. Rand Paul never had to fight assumptions based on his color or ethnicity. If he had, he'd feel different about bulk data. That's funny. That seems like an assumption about him right there. Doesn't it? Anyway, this is not a parody. This is not a joke. This is a real thing that happened. And I checked the legit Salon Twitter feeds, and I checked the parody Salon Twitter feed, and the parody Salon Twitter feed just simply retweeted it. They didn't even bother. This is a real article. And the real argument here is that because Rand Paul is a heterosexual white male and has never experienced racial bigotry or, you know, assumptions about his experience or anything, that's why he's against mass surveillance. But any good liberal of a minority background can tell you that they much prefer letting the computers do all the police work, because computers can't be racist. And so, therefore, it's objective and scientific when the computers identify terrorists. And that's why everyone ought to be surveilled by government computers all day long instead of by racist cops asking a racist judge for a warrant. You white supremacist, you, for disagreeing with that. Really, it's at Salon.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe.
Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm at scotthorton.org. That's where I keep all of my stuff. Yes, Fitz, it was that same article as the one I was talking about. I love this. FBI Boston suspect talked of beheading and killing police officers and Pamela Geller. Oh, really? And how do they know that, huh? Because his best friend was an informant of some kind? Give me a break. Let me know when you got some accusations somebody can hang their hat on. What a joke. But anyway, so yeah, you're a racist if you're against the Patriot Act. Everybody knows that no person is capable. No person in government is capable of being responsible or taking responsibility. And so from now on, the computer should decide everything for us all. And if you don't think that, it's because you're a racist. Only computers are not racist. So only computers should be the overlords of all of mankind. And if you don't agree with that, then you're a Nazi. It says so right here at Salon.com. How in the world could Rand Paul oppose unreasonable searches and seizures? Because of his white privilege. The poor and the downtrodden all demand to be monitored all day long so they can prove their innocence all day, you know, so that the government won't ever mess with them. Yeah. Boy, I guess somebody made a decision. They had a meeting at Salon.com where they said, all right, that's it. We're turning into the Daily Mail. We're going to run nothing but crap. And Patrick L. Smith. Okay. Good job, guys. Oh, yeah, did I mention? Follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. Oh, yeah, did I mention? Buy transcripts of the interviews at scotthorton.org/transcripts. Did I mention? Join the chat room at scotthorton.org/chat. We got Fitzy G and the boys hanging out. scotthorton.org/chat. And then, I'm sorry, I have to mention this. It's just in my peripheral vision here. Danny Coulson. Really? Danny Coulson, the former FBI agent, says vilifying police officers, you know, like criticizing them for killing people, for tapping our phones, for etc., etc., you know, breaking the law, violating our rights. Coulson says vilifying police officers is playing into the hands of ISIS. Really? What about if I criticize Barack Obama's welfare policies? I mean, I am saying that the emperor wears no clothes and cannot be trusted to do the right thing to control our society on the taking care of people's medical needs level. Does that undermine support for his national security policy? And what if everybody on the right says his national security policy sucks? We still all have to believe in it? Or else we're supporting ISIS? Or it's just the cops? We can hate Barack Obama and his guys, but just not the cops who actually do the killing for them? Is that really how we're supposed to believe it? And we're supposed to hear this from Danny Coulson, who let all of Timothy McVeigh's friends get away with it? Danny Coulson, who ought to be doing life in prison right now for being an accessory after the fact in the case of a murder of 189 people by who? Guess who? Terrorists. It's like on MSNBC. This is on Fox here, according to Twitter. The screen cap here. Just like on MSNBC all the time, they have Jim Cavanaugh, the butcher of Waco, from the ATF. Oh, yeah. Well, he's a law enforcement expert. How do we know? Because he killed Branch Davidians and lied about it endlessly. So he's now our law enforcement expert. Yeah. And then on the other channel is Danny Coulson, the guy who let all of Timothy McVeigh's friends get away. Telling us that if we don't trust him, then ISIS is going to get us. Yeah, you know what? I think I'll take my chances with Stanley Smith. With Burns Security. They still have Burns Security? I failed their piss test. Yeah, I was a rent-a-cop in college. I mean, I would just sit around and read books and do my homework. I never guarded anything, really. But it was a fun job. A ridiculous shirt, but it was all right. Anyway, yeah. So you have to believe in the FBI that allowed the Oklahoma bombing to happen on their watch and then failed to prosecute 90% of the people who were responsible for it. And if you don't trust them, oh, the same guys who 9/11 happened on their watch too, the same guys that the Fort Hood massacre happened on their watch, the same guys who the Boston massacre happened on their watch. But if you criticize them for sucking at security, you guys suck at security. Maybe someone else should be providing the security around here because you suck at it. Then you are what's causing them to suck at security, and you're going to get yourself and everyone that you care about killed by ISIS. Aren't you just terrified? Don't you just want to bend right over for Danny Coulson, McVeigh's best friend in the world, who helped all of McVeigh's other best friends get away with it scot-free? Piece of crap. Danny Coulson. And you know, he's one of the better of them, because I got all the clips here of Danny Coulson saying, actually, yeah, that's right, we did let them all get away with it. Don't I have those clips of you, Danny Coulson? Oh, I sure do. Let's see here, man. Users, new, audio, OKC. OKC, BBC. Yeah, here we go. So there's some Danny Coulson in here, right?
On the day of the bombing, he was in charge at the crime scene. Coulson believes the FBI might not have caught everyone involved in the attack.
We know there were 24 people that were interviewed by the FBI that said they saw Mr. McVeigh on April 19th with someone else, and they had no reason to make it up. They didn't have a dog in that fight. They didn't have any reason to just to make something up. They told the agents exactly what they saw, and the agents wrote it down. If only one person had seen it, or two or three, but 24 people say, yes, I saw him with somebody else. That's pretty powerful.
And then covered it up. Some decisions in the FBI's investigation puzzle even those on the inside.
It wasn't until after I left the case, some months later, that I know that FBI headquarters told them to close down the investigation on Loam City, which has some very significant connections to Mr. McVeigh and to previous bombing attempts. So I don't know why they did that. That's something that, and it's very unusual. And never in my career did I ever have FBI headquarters tell me not to investigate something. They would often suggest things to do or courses of action to follow or other leads we may have missed, but I never had them ever say, don't investigate that part of the case. That was a total aberration to me.
That's absolutely not true. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. I got a couple more of those, actually. Yep, you gotta trust the government, says Danny Coulson, who just admitted to you that the Justice Department and the FBI let McVeigh's friends get away with it. 24 witnesses. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours, max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Oh, man, I got so much news to talk about. I did not mean to get sidetracked talking about the Oklahoma City bombing, but, you know, it's such an important one to me because, well, you know, all the innocent people that got killed. But the level of lies and the fact they were able to get away with the lies, the fact they were able to just pretend that McVeigh's only help was two states away at the time. End of story. And yet, as you heard the FBI agent Danny Colson admit right there, there were 24 witnesses who saw McVeigh that morning in Oklahoma City, and all of them saw him with somebody else. There were no witnesses who saw him who did not see him with somebody else. None. They spent that whole trial interviewing 7-year-old girls about how sad they were that their mom was dead, who had no information about what happened whatsoever. Tell me, how sad are you? Very, very sad. Okay, thanks. No further questions, Your Honor. And that's how they convicted him. They couldn't use any of the video footage, which they now pretend they don't even have, because all the video footage includes other people. Like Richard Guthrie. And Peter Langan. And probably Mark Thomas and Michael Brescia and Brescia, whatever. A lot of others. Possibly even including Andre Strassmeyer. So, and to think that they got away with that, that people swallowed that. You know, in the book Our Dumb Century by The Onion, their article about the Oklahoma bombing is massive increase in angel sightings in Oklahoma. Really? That's your joke? Ridiculing the families of the dead? How about Americans buy lone bomber fantasy scenario because they're so goddamn stupid. They're so unbelievably stupid. And meanwhile, anyone who was willing to, you know, read the entire A section of the newspaper just picked at random during that era, you might have found AP stories saying, yeah, the ATF had an informant inside the FBI's terrorist ring the whole time. She tried to stop it. ATF tried to stop it. FBI said, don't worry, we'll handle it. And then they didn't handle it. Or maybe, in fact, they did. And that's the problem. And that was in the Associated Press. Her name is Carol Howe, H-O-W-E. You can read all about it. How do you know so much about the FBI's terrorist ring here? Well, because it had been infiltrated by an ATF informant. That's how. And she told her whole story. Oh, and her name is Howe, by the way. At one point, Meg Ryan bought the rights to her story. Never made the movie. I guess a lot of movies don't get made. But anyway, yeah, so you live in a world of BS, dude. That's the point. Where even Danny Colson admits he's guilty of helping McVeigh's friends get away with it, and then, but no problem. And then the world moves on anyway. Like, that ain't the most quotable quote of the, you know, early 21st century or something. All right, anyway. General Allen, he's running the Iraq War right now. Iraq War 2.5. ISIS war to last, quote, a generation or more. I'm beginning to think that you guys are playing dirty pool here, dude. Yeah, you see, what we want to do is we want to drag this thing out as long as we can so that we can sell Lockheed products. So that we can have an excuse to take your freedom away. You stupid idiots, you. That's a rough paraphrase of this quote from General Allen. Now, look, if you sent in General Allen's Marines, they could kill ISIS to death in a few months. They could take a couple of months, depending on how quickly you dropped them in there, to take Fallujah, to take Ramadi, to take Mosul, to turn these guys back into an insurgency, not eliminate them entirely. But erase the concept of such a thing as an actual Islamic State? Absolutely. And they just as easy could grab the arms of the Saudis and the Turks, etc., and twist them really hard and force them to stop backing the Islamic State right now. And you too, Israel. So all I have to do is call them out publicly, call them out very seriously in private, and then insist that the Saudis must stand back and watch as the Iranians kill the Islamic State. Obviously, the Iranians are the only ones in the region who are willing to even try, and they're capable of doing so, I think. They've got their special forces in there. All America has to do really is nothing and let the Iranians fight the war. All they have to do is force all of our allies to stop backing our worst enemies in the world.
What
the hell are we even talking about here? What kind of stupid joke? It's not a sick joke. It's a completely ridiculous, retarded joke. Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday said, BDS, boycott and sanctions against Israel. Why demand a boycott against all the products of the Islamic State? Yeah, except the Islamic State doesn't produce anything. Except corpses. They have no trading partners in the world except the Turks. And it's black market oil sales on very low levels. They have no other exports whatsoever. They have no trading relationship with any state other than black market relationships. Secret transfers of money, again, from America's allied states. What the hell is there to boycott? And, you know, I saw John Kerry say, you know, the Islamic State is no more a state than I am a helicopter. Yeah, well, that's a good one, and I guess I'm torn about that, because on one hand, they really are just a militia, but they're a militia that right now stands unopposed. They're very, very well backed, and they've carved out a region. I mean, they number in Coburn says he thinks they got more than 100,000 men now. Prothero doesn't doubt it. I don't know. They're a proto-state, and they've got nobody really encroaching on any of their borders. They're the ones doing all the encroaching. So, but on the other hand, they're completely landlocked, and they're completely surrounded by enemies. And they got the worst part of Iraq. That's part of why they're fighting so hard. That's kind of why the Sunnis fought so hard against the loss of Baghdad back in Iraq War II. Was because if you control the national government, then you can steal the oil money from the Kurds and the Shia, the Kurds in the north and the Shia in the south. But if the Shia or a Shia-Kurdish alliance rules Baghdad, and all the Sunnis are kicked out of there and lose their influence in the government, then what do they got? They got the least oil-havenest part of Iraq. The least money-making part. It's all up near Kirkuk and down near Basra. But now to take on this ragtag group, maybe it's either the most powerful terrorist group ever or one of the weakest states ever. But now to take them on is going to take a generation or more, huh? That's what they keep telling you over there at the Pentagon. It's going to be a long war. A generation? That's 20 years. We've been bombing Iraq for 25 years already. 25 years! We've been bombing Iraq. And just think about that, man. If you, like, went out at light speed on a trip and you came back and the Cold War was over and they said, yeah, and America's been picking on Iraq ever since then, you would say, what? I thought Saddam Hussein was our friend. I thought Iraq was a crappy little piece of crap fourth world country that would have nothing if it wasn't for their oil exports. That have no military power whatsoever, that aren't even a threat to Jordan, for Christ's sake. What do you mean America's used them as a whipping boy for the last generation plus, and for the next, too? It's crazy. And they're telling it right to our face. Just forget about there ever being such a thing as peacetime. More on the Iraq War, the Syria War, Palestine news, and all kinds of stuff coming up on the show here in just a minute. It's the Scott Horton Show, scotthorton.org.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at Darren'sCoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren'sCoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. Darren'sCoffee.com. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. All right, man, let me get through some of this here for you. Join in the chat room, scotthorton.org/chat. If you want. All right, so General Allen again, Marine General running Iraq War II, says the ISIS war is to last a generation. Now, David Petraeus, I haven't seen the whole interview, but I have Jason Ditz's right up here at antiwar.com. Petraeus, U.S. probably losing the ISIS war, needs new strategy. A far-reaching interview is how Jason describes it, so I look forward to watching that whole thing. But here he claims, the loss of Ramadi is a big dang deal, and we definitely need more troops on the ground. And, you know, I don't know if they talked about it. Are you saying send in the infantry, or are you saying you need more people shooting laser pointers as spotters for airplanes, or what exactly are you talking about? Are you talking about invading and conquering Fallujah again? Is that what you're talking about? Or what in the... We need more troops. Yeah, okay, that's a little vague, dude. But anyway, then he says, oh, you know, backing the Shiite militias is the very last resort. Sorry, the Iraqi government, their only fighting force are the Shiite militias, plurals. And in fact, I have a piece here from Musings on Iraq. I read this guy occasionally, probably not often enough, actually. Joel Wing is his name. And he had a thing here saying, Iranian and Hezbollah advisors committed to Baiji refinery and Ramadi ops, leading to another loss for the Revolutionary Guard. But anyway, so he's saying... In April 2015, right after the taking of Tikrit, the Islamic State assaulted the Baiji refinery. They had attacked there before, but they made their biggest advance this time, taking over 50% of the facility. Government forces and Hashd al-Shaabi units, I don't know exactly what that is, but he links to something else there, including members of the Badr organization, Asaib al-Al-Haq, the Khorasani Brigade, Khatib Imam Ali, and Jund al-Imam were sent to relieve the besieged unit protecting the refinery. Iranians were in a supporting role, operating artillery, rockets, mortars, anti-tank missiles, and flying drones to collect intelligence. Iranians and their allies in Lebanese Hezbollah, not Iraqi Hezbollah, different Hezbollah, Lebanese Hezbollah were not only providing advisors at Baiji, but were also said to be fighting on the front lines. but, you know, yeah, so this war, as David Petraeus would never admit to you, was fought for these Iranian militias, Iranian-backed Iraqi militias all along. From the very word go, from the invasion of Iraq on. I'm sorry for being a broken record for some of you. I'll try to leave out a lot of the detail here, but just for the newbies, Iraq, what was the nation that was Iraq, a 60% Shia Arab, 20% Sunni Arab, and 20% Sunni Kurd. And the Kurds, even though they were Sunnis, were long oppressed by the Sunni Arabs along with the Shiites. And when America invaded, they brought with them, whether they meant to or not, the Iraqi, at least so-called traitors, who when Jimmy Carter hired Saddam Hussein to invade Iran in 1980, they fled to Iran. and they fought for Iran in that war. And Iran had created, especially the Badr Brigade, was the militia of the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution. So, you know, Paul Wolfowitz and them always wanted for it to be a majority Shiite government anyway. Then these guys came in, and they were the only ones prepared to take power. Except they were the ones who were backed by the Iranians all along. And then when the war was almost a year old, in January of 2004, the Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, the highest-ranking Shiite cleric in the world, religiously speaking, it's not quite like Catholicism with the bishops and cardinals and pope, but it sort of kinda, and I don't mean in their claimed magical powers or whatever, but I just mean in the way the form of the Shiite religion, religious organization is. There are a million little different Sunni imams. They're more like the Protestants in a sense. Whereas there's really only one Shia church, if you understand what I mean. And so Sistani is the most, the highest ranking of them. And he said, hey, if you believe in God, I want you to demand one man, one vote. And at that point, America's, you know, so-called rigged caucus system where they were going to pick people from all over the country, but who would work with the Americans and basically do as they were told, was thrown out the window. It was really the neocons' plan all along, and it was a fait accompli, especially once the army was disbanded and the Ba'athist government, every last Ba'athist down to the school teachers, were fired. It was basically a done deal. Then the whole war, what you remember as Iraq War II, was a civil war between the Shiite factions and the Sunni factions, with America serving as the sock puppets of the Shiite militias, not the other way around. The U.S. as the Ayatollah Khomeini and the Ayatollah Sistani, Abdulaziz al-Hakim and Muqtada al-Sadr's humble servants. And so Petraeus, hell, he did nothing but fail. He did nothing but give guns to the enemies of the guys he was fighting for all along. He's still fighting a war for them all along. Same time he's fighting them in Sadr City, and the same time he's building up a Sunni army to oppose them. What a great general. And then after he helped the Shiite militias win the civil war, he said, now get the hell, they said, get the hell out. We don't need you. So now, of course, since he's the guy who lost the Iraq war, everybody turns to him. What should we do, Petraeus? Oh, well, definitely we got to surge again. We got to escalate again. And only as a last resort should we again enlist ourselves as the auxiliary force of the Badr militia. Why? Again, I think in the chat room, number six nailed it. Gotta pay off that house in the Hamptons, man, that's why. Now check this out. This is an interesting article, man. It's kind of long and in-depth, and I'm not going to break it into all different pieces, but you got this guy Charles Lister, and he's from the Brookings Institution, which is sort of like the Council on Foreign Relations, more of a centrist Democrat party type think tank, although very, very Zionist since they got all that money from Haim Sabin, but they're also very, very Qatari ever since they got all that money from Qatar. And who was it that did the big report about all the foreign money in the think tanks recently, man? Why is that escaping my attention? Somebody did a real big expose of how much these think tanks have been taken from the Qataris. Oh, and it was Justin Raimondo had a write-up about it. I know that because he was focusing on how Brookings was blaming the Kuwaitis for financing all the terrorists in Syria. And the point was, oh, that's funny because it was you and the people who paid you. Anyway, but this guy Lister, he does, you must admit, understand the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda in very good detail here, and has a lot to say about this. There's a lot to learn, but there's a lot of terrible, weird stuff. But I can tell you now, I'll spoil it for you. At the end, he says, we should not believe the rebranding of al-Nusra. Al-Nusra is al-Qaeda. And if the government of Damascus ever falls, we're going to see these guys for who they really are, which is a bunch of head-chopping crazies. So don't let their PR work on you. But then again, kind of through the whole article, he lets the PR work on him. The rebranding of al-Qaeda in Syria as the moderates, since the mythical moderates have been outed as such, and the Islamic State is on the march, who are we going to back? Well, we got to start calling Nusra the moderates, according to the Qataris at least. Now, Lister, again, doesn't quite go for it completely, but still, it's worth a read. But check out the, if I got the time, I got the time. Check out the nonsensicalness of this here paragraph, man, if it sounds as crazy to you as it does to me. He says, here he's talking about them using the American weapons, TOW anti-tank missile systems being used by al-Nusra to fight against Assad. And then he says, thus, the reality on the ground is more complex than the YouTube videos and media headlines would suggest. As this author revealed in early May, the depth of coordination between Western-backed FSA factions, Islamists, Jabhat al-Nusra, again, that's al-Qaeda in Syria, and other jihadists has increased markedly in Idlib since April. Oh, man, the music's playing. I don't have time to finish this paragraph. God dang it, Bobby. I'm sorry. I suck at this, guys. I'm going to pick this up on the other side of the break. America and its allies, very complicated relationship with its allied enemies. Enemy allies? Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, welcome back. All right, here you go. Where I left off in the last segment, sorry. I was talking about this article by Charles Lister, al-Qaeda expert at the Brookings Institution. He says suspiciously. Or with his voice full of suspicion or something. Anyway, so I don't even remember what it says anymore, but I remember highlighting this paragraph and wanting to read it out loud. So here it goes. The reality on the ground is more complex. Oh, he's talking about American weapons up ending up in the hands of al-Qaeda fighters and their great success with our help. Thus, the reality on the ground is more complex than YouTube videos and media headlines would suggest, as this author revealed in early May, the depth of coordination between Western-backed FSA factions, Islamists, al-Nusra, and other jihadists, jihadists has increased markedly in Idlib since April, both due to a natural need for cooperation on the ground, but also thanks to a tacit order to do so from the U.S. and Saudi-led coordination room in southern Turkey. Having spoken extensively with leading commanders from across the Syrian spectrum in recent weeks, it is clear this cooperation has at least partly been motivated by a desire to ensure victories in Idlib do not become strategic gains for al-Qaeda. After all, it has been starkly clear since the summer of 2014 that Idlib in particular represents Jabhat al-Nusra's most valuable power base. Huh? America and Saudi in Turkey gave an order to their militias to work with and arm al-Nusra in order to help them take Idlib. In order to marginalize them? I don't think so. Sorry again for being a broken record. It's the same thing I've been telling you for 4 years straight. There are no moderates fighting
in the civil war on the side of, allied with the jihadists there. They're all extremists. It was in 2011, maybe 2012. I think it was 2011 when the young boy at the roadside stand said, hey, sorry, I wouldn't even give a discount to Muhammad himself when a customer was trying to get a break on the price. So the rebels shot the boy in the face and killed him right in front of his mom, 14-year-old boy. Suicide attacks, head choppings, all this has been going on from the very beginning, and it's been in the news that the Saudis have been behind it, and we're sending Saudi Mujahideen, veterans of the Iraq War, that America was sending the fighters as soon as the war was over in the fall of 2011 in Libya, that they immediately were turned around and sending jihadists and guns off to keep going in Syria. That these guys are, they're the same kind of guys who did the attack on the ambassador. Our enemies, our allies. Our enemies, our allies. Al-Qaeda. Yeah, it's amazing. And then, so they talk about how, these guys are still loyal to Zawahiri, and they make a point about that. This is as Asa, what's his name, was saying on the show last week. Jelani said that, he's still loyal to Al-Qaeda, but don't worry. He got instructions from Ayman al-Zawahiri to not attack the West, to just focus on Assad for now in Syria. And so, see? What's the problem? In fact, this is great, right? Al-Qaeda has called a temporary ceasefire against the United States so they can focus on Assad. And fighting with America against Assad. Fighting with American weapons. And Saudi dollars in their pockets. Amazing that they're trying this. And, I don't know. I guess maybe I should read this whole thing again. Because it's long and complicated. Did I tell you what it was called? An internal struggle. Al-Qaeda's Syrian affiliate is grappling with its identity. By Charles Lister, again of the Brookings Institution, writing at the Huffington Post, an internal struggle, Al-Qaeda. So just say internal struggle, Al-Qaeda, Syria, it'll come up, right? Or Charles Lister, for your keywords there if you want to read this thing. I think his whole thing about, we shouldn't be helping these guys at the end is just plausible deniability for actually more or less recommending the whole thing all along. Now, maybe I'm reading that wrong. Maybe during the break, you guys can plow through this thing real quick and tell me if I'm misinterpreting this or what. But it sounds to me like he's really normalizing Al-Qaeda, saying we don't have to worry about him very much. And then at the end, he sort of says, not that I'm saying that. But, and we've been complaining about this and covering this on the show that in the sacking of Idlib, we talked about this with Gareth, that, America had given permission to the Saudis and the Turks, go ahead and work outright with al-Nusra to get this done. I guess I'm ignorant as hell, man. I should spend more time at the moon of Alabama or something. But did you guys know, was it already publicly admitted on the record that there's a joint U.S. and Saudi base in Turkey where they're coordinating this thing? I mean, don't call me surprised or whatever. I would have just thought it was the CIA. I don't know who it is. I guess it probably is the CIA. But here Charles Lister from Brookings has no problem saying that the attack on Idlib was coordinated by the Americans and the Saudis from Turkey. With the arms coming from us, the money coming from the Saudis, with al-Nusra in the lead, they succeeded and took the town. But then the reason why was to marginalize al-Nusra? It has been at least partly motivated by a desire to ensure victories in Idlib do not become strategic gains for Al-Qaeda. Huh? Giving them strategic gains prevents them from profiting from the strategic gains? I think maybe this guy's just lying. He's telling the truth, but he's lying about what it means. Anyway, look at it yourself. That's the war. That's the insanity of America's foreign policy in the Middle East. You never know if America's on the side of the Iranians and their barbarians or the Saudis and theirs in any particular war in any particular day. You know, in Iraq right now, all the Shia and the Iranians, they all believe that ISIS is an American plot to fight them. That all of the American, so-called support for the Baghdad government, even, I guess, in helping them take back Tikrit, that really is all just for show. And they kind of have a point. Obama himself admitted to Jeffrey Goldberg. I don't know if you can call it an admission. He was bragging about it at the time. He boasted to Jeffrey Goldberg that, yeah, that's right. You're right, Jeffrey Goldberg. We're doing everything we can to weaken Assad in Syria to benefit Israel, to weaken Iran and their position. And why is everybody so hell-bent on why we gotta weaken Syria to weaken Iran? Well, because Oops gave Baghdad to Iran. So now we gotta, as a consolation prize, we gotta move on and make things worse in the country next door on the other side. Amazing. It is amazing. Again, I haven't had a chance to read this, but it's by Prothero, and I like his journalism, man. I don't always agree with him on everything, particularly not on Syria. But here he writes, the Iraqi army is too exhausted to fight, and it's in Politico magazine, so go look at that. There is no Iraqi army, it's just the militias. As Petraeus says, the last resort. In other words, the guys that we've been fighting for now 12 years straight. Without cease. Oh, and again, Dan Sanchez at antiwar.com. Israel and Iran coming up. It's the Skull Horton Show.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.
All right, guys, welcome back. Now, you might remember back in 2012, some bin Ladenites poked their head up, established a mosque in the Gaza Strip, and Hamas drove up there with men with guns and shot them all to death. No bin Ladenites allowed in the Gaza Strip. That's the law. Punishable by no trial, just a massacre. End of you. That's Hamas's policy. They're Democrats. They don't like all this Zawahiriism. And this happened just the other day. There was a shootout between Hamas and in fact, what the hell happened? Because I had that story and now I lost it. Let me see here. Gaza Salafis and hit the Google News. Yeah, gunmen killed during clashes between Gaza security and Salafists. This is from 2 days ago, right? Then yesterday, some of these Salafists, oh no, I did have it here. Gaza Salafist leader killed in gunfight with Hamas cops. Again, Hamas kills ISIS guys or wannabe ISIS guys in Gaza. But then, last night, our time, early morning Palestine time, the Salafists fired a couple of rockets harmlessly over the prison wall into Israel. And then, so what do you guess the Israelis did? The Israelis bombed Hamas targets. Because, you know, Hamas is ISIS, is Iran, is blah, 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 says Benjamin Netanyahu to people who are dumb enough to want to be lied to by the likes of him. My God, man, have some self-respect. There you go. So, that's funny because if you take into account, say, for example, oh, I don't know, the New York Times from yesterday, where they were saying, when ISIS attacks Nusra, and then the Assad government doesn't respond by bombing ISIS, then they have a tacit alliance with ISIS against Nusra. That's the New York Times line. Well, never mind Israel's direct support for terrorists in Syria. We'll get to that in 1 second. But what about their indirect support right here for terrorists in the Gaza Strip? I mean, hell, if Hamas, with its police force and its electoral victories, etc., is a terrorist group, then what the hell do you call a bunch of wannabe ISIS guys? A bunch of declared ISIS guys in Hamas. I mean, in the Gaza Strip that Hamas is shooting and killing. Israeli support for them. Tacit. Ooh, do I still have that New York Times headline? Because I could change the wording around where it may mean, this could mean possibly that. Yeah. And now, again, Asa Wynn Stanley. That was the name of the guy I was trying to think of earlier, the guy that I interviewed on the show last week, who's been writing for the Electronic Intifada. And here he has one at Jacobin Magazine. Yeah, they're commies, but it's a good article. Israel's unlikely alliance. Is Israel helping Al-Qaeda in Syria? And the answer is yes. And the reason why is because he's kind of settling at, and I think this is probably correct, that they don't really want to see Assad overthrown at this point. They're just trying to keep the war going as long as they can to bleed both sides to death. As, in fact, even the New York Times put it back in 2012, right? And he has the link here. Yes, here it is. September 2013, New York Times. I believe it's by Judy Roederin. Israel backs limited strikes against Syria, and he says Alon Pincus, a former Israeli diplomat, said, "Let both sides bleed, hemorrhage to death." That's the strategic thinking here. And but then again, they do go back and forth, and there is a debate in Israel about just how much help they ought to be giving, either side or none here. Who's the lesser evil at this point? Who's more dangerous for the long term, Assad or Nusra? Never mind the humanity. Oh, and all the crocodile tears for the civilians of Syria, unending, while America and its proxies just continue this war with the stated goal of bleeding the people of Syria. Stuck between the fighting factions. And man, just imagine. All it takes is just think about it for a second. What happens if Damascus falls and the state government of Syria and its army is destroyed? Then it's all free for all ethnic and sectarian based faction militias at war. And that's it. And the probable annihilation of the Christians, the Druze. I guess the Kurds been holding their own for a while now. We'll see what happens with them. But, man, that'll just be, we'll be at the halfway point of the Civil War then, which brings me to this other article that, what, I lost? Where is it? Here. It's Alistair Crook. If Syria and Iraq become fractured, so too will Tripoli and North Lebanon. And he's not talking about Tripoli in Libya. He's talking about Tripoli in Lebanon and how... And he goes through the story here of it used to be a socialist, I think he says, and then more of a nationalist town. And then this one guy went to Saudi and got himself an education and came back to Tripoli and then must have been an Israeli war or two. And now I'm totally paraphrasing this in error, but it's something along the lines of, yeah, now all of North Tripoli, Lebanon is, you know, hardcore Bin Laden town. Or, you know, those types. And he's saying that, if the Americans succeed in fracking Syria completely and fracking Iraq, then expect northern Lebanon to go next. Starting in the town of Tripoli. It's all very closely tied together. This is Alistair Crook, the former MI6 agent and author of Resistance, the Essence of Islamic Revolution. I'd like to read that. I'm not sure about this guy, but this article is definitely worth looking at. If you like worrying about stuff, if Syria and Iraq become fractured, so too will Tripoli and North Lebanon. All right, and then what time is it? Oh, good. So when we get back from this break, y'all, then we'll get to Israel-Palestine and Iran. And then I also have some miscellaneous news concerning talks in Yemen. Fighting in Ukraine is heating back up again, and Guantanamo Bay. If possible, I'll be able to get to those stories in the last segment here, maybe, or two out of the three or so. But coming up here in a minute, bunch of very important stories from Mondo Weiss this morning and from yesterday, and very important developments in, I don't know, at least the rhetoric surrounding the Iran nuclear negotiations. I don't know if any real progress has been made. I'm really worried, honestly, as stupid as this sounds, that John Kerry's broken leg is going to be the final monkey wrench in this damn thing and is going to scotch it. I don't know. I'm still kind of hopeful, but we'll see. Hang tight just a minute. Israel-Palestine next on the Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org, LRN.FM.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1 ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commoditydiscs. Commoditydiscs.com.
All right, kids. I mean that in a nice way. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Now, I guess the worst part of this is that it's Obama saying it. But on the other hand, it's a good thing that it's Obama saying it. He's the president of the United States. So, on one hand, of course, that discredits the thing he's saying. And him being who he is adds to that. Since he's so horrible on so much. Then on the other hand, the average American considers him the head of state. Right? Not the measly chief executive of some departments created by Congress and the general government that has so little authority, has nothing to do with us. Oh no, he's our leader. Dear leader. The most powerful man in the world, Barack Obama. Well, so he did an interview here with Israeli Channel 2's Ilana Dayan that aired yesterday. And, man, he really goes out after Netanyahu. And, I mean, in his Obama-y way, it's not like he's, you know, angry. But he says, I think Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is somebody who's predisposed. Well, let me say what the question was exactly here. His first statement is just, okay, it's just a statement. I think Prime Minister Netanyahu is somebody who's predisposed to security, to think perhaps that peace is naive, to see the worst possibilities as opposed to the best possibilities in Arab partners or Palestinian partners. And so I do think right now, those politics and those fears are driving the government's response. And I understand it. But what may seem wise and prudent on the short term can actually end up being unwise over the long term. Again, I'm quoting the president. He's still talking here. Obama. And if the status quo is not resolved because of the demographics, because of the pressures and the frustrations that are going to exist in the West Bank and certainly already exist in Gaza, that over time, Israel is going to have a choice about the nature of the Israeli state and its character. And if it loses its essential values that are enshrined in its Declaration of Independence, that is something that has to be guarded against as well. Again, friends don't let friends drive drunk. Barack Obama, the president, saying, listen, I love Israel so much that I'm willing to tell you guys that you are effing up, man. And what he's referring to here, of course, is when he says the demographic problem, this is understood by most. But what he means is there will be more Palestinians, more Arab and Arab, Muslim and Christian and Druze Palestinians in Israel with its de facto annexation of the occupied territories than there are Jews. And then at that point, it will be a minority rule state. The last pretense of being a democratic state will be dropped. It'll just be a Jewish state and a Jewish minority ruled state, which will, of course, absolutely delegitimize Israel in the so-called international community, even in America and in Europe, for the long term. It's been 25, almost 30 years or something, right? Since, 25 years since this worked on ending apartheid in South Africa. The rest of Earth just isn't going to stand for this anymore. Minority rule, apartheid, like this. And so, Obama is saying to the Israelis, hey, only reason I'm criticizing is because you got to shape up. And he's saying, listen, I understand that you're worried. I understand your concerns. But I'm saying you're going about solving them the wrong way. You're sabotaging yourself. Diane, the interviewer says, despite his last-minute campaign promise to never allow a Palestinian state, Netanyahu actually is for a Palestinian state, and shows he does in recent statements. Quote, he does endorse a Palestinian state alongside the state of Israel. Why not take him at his word? Obama isn't buying it. Did I tell y'all I'm reading Phil Weiss here at MondoWeiss.net? Obama isn't buying it. Quote, I think when he spoke right before the election, he was fairly unequivocal. That is Netanyahu. He was fairly unequivocal in saying that a two-state solution, a Palestinian state, wouldn't happen during his prime ministership. As long as he was prime minister, there wouldn't be two states. Subsequently, his statements have suggested that there is a possibility of a Palestinian state, but it has so many caveats. Can you imagine? This is the words of an American president. But it has so many caveats, so many conditions, that it is not realistic to think that those conditions would be met any time in the near future. And so the danger here is that Israel as a whole, the danger is that Israel as a whole loses credibility, he says. Already, the international community does not believe that Israel is serious about a two-state solution. The statement the prime minister made compounded that belief that there's not a commitment there. Diane, the interviewer, again, notes, I'm reading Phil Weiss talking here. Diane notes that in his Atlantic interview, Obama referred to Netanyahu's pre-election statements about Arabs and against two states and said they will have consequences. This is Haaretz's story. Obama won't defend Israel at the UN anymore. Quote, the practical consequences I referred to. This is Obama talking now. The practical consequences I referred to. Let's be very specific. If there are additional resolutions introduced, and now he doesn't have to be very specific here. He can say, well, I'm out of it and pass the buck and talk later. Let's be very specific. If there are additional resolutions introduced in the United Nations, up until this point, we have pushed away against European efforts, for example, or other efforts, because we've said the only way to get this resolved is if the two parties work together. Well, here's the challenge. If, in fact, there's no prospect of an actual peace process, if nobody believes anymore that there's a peace process, then it becomes difficult to argue with those who are concerned about settlement construction, those who are concerned about the current situation. It's more difficult for me to say to them, be patient, wait, because we have a process here. Because all they need to do is point to the statements that have been made to say there is no process. Again, Phil Weiss talking. Now he throws in the towel. Diane, the interviewer, asks, do you think there's a chance of you giving it another try in the next 18 months? Obama says, I don't see a likelihood of a framework agreement. I don't see the likelihood of us being able to emerge from Camp David or some other process and hold up hands and say, and the interviewer interrupts, you're not that naive. And Obama says, no. And then, as Weiss says, again, Obama turns to the politics of fear at the end of the video excerpt. And he's talking about the self-sabotage. Why not read it? I got the time. There's no doubt that Prime Minister Netanyahu and I come from different political traditions and have different orientations. I'm less worried about any particular disagreement that I have with Prime Minister Netanyahu. I am more worried about what I described earlier, which is an Israeli politics that's motivated only by fear. And that then leads to a loss of those core values that when I was young and was admiring Israel from afar were what were the essence of this nation. There are things that you can lose that don't just involve rockets. Now, I don't know about what's so great about Israel before or whatever. They were socialists before they were fascists. Great. But anyway, attacking the politics, the spirit of fear there. Very important interview. It's amazing and important that Obama said those things, don't you think? Let's wait till Jeb comes.
Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
All right. Many things to say in such a short amount of time. I want to go back to the politics of fear here that dang old stupid darn murderer President Obama was saying here. Something that was really educational for me in understanding Israel. Well, read Max Blumenthal's book. I read about two-thirds of it or something and just, oh, God almighty. Goliath, have you read that thing? I didn't like reading it. It's horrible. Anyway, so it's in there. But if you want to just, maybe knock this thing out in an hour and a half, you can check out this thing. It's on YouTube. It's on other things, archive.org, this and that. It's called Defamation. I've talked about this before. It came out in like 2007, I guess. And it's done by a Jewish Israeli who says, man, I hear about anti-Semitism all day and night. I want to learn about it. I want to go out in search of anti-Semitism, as William F. Buckley might say. Might have once said. And he goes out searching for it, and he can't find any legitimate anti-Semitism anywhere. Doesn't really much exist in the world. There's a lot of criticism of Israel, but that's about the occupations and all the killing and the stealing. The dishonesty surrounding it all. There are basically actual Jew-hating Nazis, and then there's everybody else who just aren't anti-Semites. They're just not. I mean, what the hell, man? I don't ever hear people talking bad about Jews. Even when the discussion is Israel, it's very rare that somebody is outright anti-Semite. And then if they are, well, they make themselves, you know, very obvious as to, you know, how marginal their opinion is. You know, all of a sudden, all Jews in the world have secret telepathy and they're all in on it with each other and all of this crap, right? Like you have actual loons who are anti-Semites and then everybody else who's just not. They're just not. And that's what this guy discovers here, is he's really surprised to find out, I guess, in a way. Well, you can tell he's kind of smart, and I think he might have suspected that in Israeli society, the fear, the persecution complex that they have there to this day is just absolutely crazy. It's absolutely crazy. It's like America in February of 2002... permanently. You know, remember that hysteria where all of a sudden the Republicans were demigods because of the greatest failure in the history of all of American government happened on their watch, and so now they were infallible and we're supposed to worship them and go to war with whoever they said, and anybody who disagrees is a traitor and they're all the evil, terrible people that are trying to kill us all. There's that level of energy, right? An orange alert every day. That level of energy, apparently, according to this documentary, and it comes through, believe me, it comes through. This is the level of emergency that the Israeli people believe that they live in on a daily basis. And it would be absolutely laughable if it wasn't so tragic. I mean, it really is just absurd. It's like a Monty Python skit or something. You know, the only way... I mean, I don't think this is really overstating it. Watch the movie. Again, it's called Defamation. I don't think it's overstating it. that the impression that the average Israeli, at least according to this documentary, again, my impression from this, and, you know, I think Max Blumenthal kind of says, yeah, man, I'm telling you, I've been over there a lot, and that's how it is, that they're, the impression that the average Israeli Jew is left with on a regular basis is that all non-Jews in the world only want to kill them. That's the only reason we're even here, basically, is to all be antagonists in their movie. It's the only reason we get out of bed in the morning. It's the only reason we go to work and buy food, is because we're biding our time so we stay alive long enough so that one day we can have a chance to kill them all. It's the most absurd. I'm telling you, man, you got to watch this movie. And you know, I'm not saying, well, I guess what I'm saying is that they're susceptible to this level of nonsense, just like Americans are. They're susceptible to the TV and to state propaganda, as susceptible as Americans are. And yet the propaganda there never lets up for a minute. And so they're just terrified. And he even shows great scenes of cognitive dissonance, too. Like when these kids go and take a field trip to Auschwitz. And, you know, the Holocaust has been over since 1945. And so here are these kids, and they're walking through this lush green field, and there's birds chirping and a tree line in the background. Blue skies, partly cloudy, slight breeze from the southwest. Beautiful day. Everything's fine. And the guy asks him, how come you have a Mossad agent as your security guard right now? And the kids, they're high school kids, you know, so they're very full of what they've been taught. And they've got a severe cognitive dissonance going on. You can tell. I'm not blaming them. I'm just explaining what's happening here. And they're saying, well, the anti-Semites are going to get us. The anti-Semites are going to get us. And it's like, yeah, but you're living in Poland in 2007 or whatever it is, not in the 1940s. And look at where you are, right? What anti-Semites are you talking about? And the girl's looking around like they're all going to burst out from the tree line and attack and kill them at any moment. And it's like, look, there are important lessons to be learned by going on a field trip to the Holocaust about what kind of things can happen, what kind of things have happened, what kind of things happened to them, to their families in many cases. But to pretend that it's, you know, we make fun of the neocons like it's always 1938. Well, in Israel, it's always 1944. 43, you know, and so you can see why they make such terrible decisions. It's just like, haven't you thought from time to time you watch Fox News and you at least hope that when foreigners watch American cable TV news that it helps buy us a little bit of slack that, oh, well, no wonder we're all so stupid and wrong because this is our TV news. This is what the Americans are being told is this nonsense. And we kind of hope that maybe they'll give us a little bit of a break for that, you know? It's that same level of misleading. I don't know how to say it. All-encompassing, sort of overarching. It's like the Truman Show or something, right? Where it's just, it's like being a Sarah Palin fan or where you live in a world of nonsense. Nothing you believe is right. None of it. I'm surprised you're not just, you know, standing on your head all damn day till you're bleeding out your ears. You're just wrong. You're lost in the dark, right? Like Carl Sagan on A World Without Science. You're just lost, man. You have no idea. So watch it. It's right there on YouTube. Just put it in there. Defamation. I think it helps explain a lot of, geez, how can the Israeli public keep supporting these hardcore right-wing nationalist, dare I say, fascist political parties? I think maybe it's because they're terrified. Yeah, no, it's not because they're Jewish. It's because they're terrified. In fact, here's an article today at Mondo Weiss. What I was told, Arabs hate Jews. And it's by a lady named Esria Charon. She was raised in Brooklyn as in a Reform Jewish family. Has known her entire life that, hey, maybe not everybody, but all Arabs all hate Jews. Oh, boy, do they hate us all.
and how she was on a tour all around the Middle East. She was in Turkey. She liked that. But the closer they got to the border with Syria, the more terrified she got. And she just did not know what was going to happen. And did she have her cover story straight? Was she going to admit that she was Jewish? Or what was going to happen? She got to Syria and everybody's like, hi, how's it going? And she said, I'm Jewish. And they said, would you like some tea? Come on in. And they didn't hate her at all, and she couldn't believe it, right? It's like, this is at Mondo Weiss today, guys, mondoweiss.net. Her mind blown that the real Syrians were not the imaginary Syrians who would have considered murdering her for a moment. They're just people, just like everybody else. Your government's been lying to you about why they need to kill people all the time. The lie is that they want to kill you, but it's just not true. You know, it's just like that Gallup poll book, Who Speaks for Islam? Well, if it's Muslims, then they love Americans. They love America. And they love our Bill of Rights and our Declaration of Independence and all that stuff. They just don't like America's evil empire that bombs them all day long, supports their fascist dictatorships and their jihadi revolutions against their fascist dictatorships. That's what they don't like. Just ask them. Gallup asked, I don't know, all of them, between Morocco and Indonesia. That is a random sample. But they traveled there. They didn't call them on the phone. They traveled from Morocco to Indonesia, everywhere but Fallujah, basically. And you know what the answer is in Fallujah. Hardly anyone anymore hates people for who they are. That's stupid. It's the what is done. All right, out of time. See y'all tomorrow. Thanks.